maybe you should just leave that aluminum dull for safety's sake. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature and to Utah's West Desert. Thanks for downloading us today. It's always a pleasure to spend some time with Stu and Kathy Fields, who launched Experimental Helo magazine in 2004. I'd like to welcome you both to Rotors Over the Rockies.
Thank you. We are enjoying it ourselves.
Yeah, this is always a good show. We like coming here. We like the people.
All right, we're going to talk more about why that is in a moment. But first, Stu, you have been associated with some writing on a particular topic that I think may be of interest to some builders among our listeners. And that is in the area of what anodizing can do to the long-term properties of wear components on an aircraft. Your article from 2 years ago talked about how anodizing could lead to new points for stress to form. But since then, you've also found out that there is something to do with the way we take care of our aircraft and maintain them that is something to be watchful for.
Yeah, well, one of the kind of stumbled on it. We found a chart that showed reduction in fatigue life caused by just the use of cleaners. And, well, that puzzled me. That same chart even showed reduction in fatigue life because of allodyning, which really shocked me. I'd never heard that before. So I started digging in a little further into what those cleaners were. And most of the cleaners that we ran across in that table were cleaners that were used prior to anodizing or allodyning. They were sort of a preparatory cleaner. And they're all etching types of cleaners. Now, we've found out that if you're using an etching cleaner, you shouldn't even do it on a flight-critical aluminum part unless you really know what you're doing, and you better be an aviation plating kind of expert to get into that or know someone that is, because anodizing cuts your fatigue life. In this chart, I think I saw it cut the fatigue life on the sample by a factor of 10. I think the fatigue life was reduced from something like 3 million cycles down to 300,000 cycles. Now, this is nasty, and if you really start doing some research, I know people won't believe this, but if they start doing some research on their own, they're going to find aviation anodizing shops that say, do not anodize flight-critical parts. And you can't emphasize that enough, because what started me out on this was a crash of a friend of mine's helicopter who had anodized a control tube, and that control tube failed in fatigue prematurely. He lost control of the helicopter and crashed into the biggest rock in the desert. So that's what motivated me to start digging into what the heck is going on, because I'd been in aviation for years and I'd never heard anybody say that. But when you talk to the aviation anodizing shops, they said, well, everybody knows it. I said, bull roar. Not everybody knows it, at least everybody minus one, because I sure didn't know it.
And well, I said we weren't going to get in depth into the resume, but tell our listeners how you come by the background that puts you in a position to research these things and why you're interested.
Well, I had a gyrocopter way back in the 60s, and so I've been playing with these rotary aircraft for quite a while. But when that friend of mine had that crash, well, I'm an engineer, retired electronics engineer, so I've sort of been schooled since the 50s and 60s to do research when I didn't know the answer to some question. And so it's caused me to dig in, and the thing that really caused me to go further with it was being an editor-publisher of the Experimental Helo magazine. That sort of onus or responsibility has caused me to dig into things that I normally would kind of shrug off and take somebody else's word of, yeah, it's all right, everybody does it kind of thing. Well, because of the magazine, if I'm going to write something about it, I have to know more about it than I normally do sitting in the bar talking about something.
Is there a particular issue of the magazine experimentalhelo.com to find out about the cleaners? Because that was new information when I heard about it.
I think the easiest way is to go to the website and go to the back issues, try year 3 and then year 4. Because of the way it's listed, you can do a search on that webpage and put in anodizing, and you'll find the article on anodizing.
Well, Kathy, now I know it's always hard to convince you to come near the microphone, but now that we've done that, tell us a little bit about where you are in terms of Experimental Helo magazine, what you set out to do, and how it's going. I know this is kind of an avocation for you, not strictly a money-making proposition.
No, money isn't coming into it, although it's going out of it. I think it is that we received a whole bunch of requests 5 years ago. You guys should do a and we decided to. And what we wish to be is a hub of information for a very small group of people worldwide who don't have an organization. We don't want to be an organization, but we do want to be the local place where you go for information. And if you can't find the information either from us or from the website, then the list of resources, the books, the other websites, and so forth should be available through us.
The internet has really opened that up, hasn't it?
Yes.
I can say it even stronger. You shut the internet down, I stopped doing the magazine. I couldn't do the research that I'm doing right now. It'd cost me $20 million buying textbooks.
Okay, I know. Experimental Hilo is $35 in the U.S. What does it cost overseas, and does that depend on whether they want to get it in PDF form?
It definitely depends on PDF form. If it is in PDF form, it's $35. I think the top cost is $68, and I may be off a dollar or two, but I think that's it. And that would be airmail, say, to Asia and to Australia, New Zealand, I think South Africa maybe. And it goes between those two, 35 to 68 and somewhere in that.
All right. When we come back from the break, I want to talk about air shows that you've been to, because some interesting things are happening. This year is going to be a very tough year for some regionals, and others seem to be doing very well. My guests are Stu and Kathy Fields of Experimental Hilo Magazine. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits? That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking today with Stu and Kathy Fields of Experimental Hilo Magazine. Guys, let's talk aviation events. You both spend a lot of time at events of all sizes, and you just got back from Marysville. How is 2009 looking so far for the regionals?
Well, the number of vendors was definitely down this year at Golden West, and the number of people coming in through the gate seemed to be down quite a bit. The air show was limited to just private, normal piston engine kind of aerobatic aircraft, and we did have one helicopter doing a little bit of a show, but it was down quite a bit from previous years. They're still trying to maintain the air show format and get the people in there. But it was definitely down. Now, we normally do, in the past, 13 shows a year, which encompasses mostly West Coast. And some, actually, I usually do Sun and Fun and Benson Days in Florida. And then Oshkosh, Homer Bell's helicopter fly-in. And there's a number, and we try and do a lot of them on the West Coast, all the way up to Arlington. And most of these are split, I guess, between what you'd call a fly-in and what you'd call an air show, where you have the full-blown performers and you're trying to hook people in from off the street with a sheep hook and get as many people in there as possible. And you do have, at an air show, you've got times during the day where you cannot fly. It's all done by air show and air show only, where the fly-ins tend to be more of an open thing for aviators. The air shows, we did one at Beale Air Force Base, 5,000 people came through the gate, and I'll bet I only talked to five aviators. The rest of the people were there for the smoke and the noise, and there was a lot of money come through the gate. The vendors there selling popcorn and hot dogs and that sort of stuff made out very well. The people selling aviation stuff don't do, we have found at least, we don't do as good at the shows as we do at the fly-in type things, because everybody at the fly-in usually is an aviator.
Well, I know that this little event we're sitting at is not advertised to the general public. I mean, it's available, and people could find it on the website at prachapter2.com. But generally, it's going to be people who build and fly aircraft here. It just so happens the way the calendar falls this year that this falls on the same weekend as the Hiller Museum's Vertical Challenge. And I guess I was a little surprised when I heard you were going to come here. Is this kind of the philosophy that a smaller event with more people with wrenches in their hand is where you want to be?
Yes, exactly. Here, yes, we know more people. And our subscribers are here. And the people who are here want to talk aircraft. Now, you guys have been sitting here, talking here for several hours this afternoon, and it has been nonstop aviation. If we were at Hiller, we would hear all about the military. We would hear all about the heavy iron, I call it. And we would not hear about what are you building, where are you finding parts, who is flying now, how soon will you be flying, who is a good instructor, where do we find instructors, and all the myriad of needs that the experimental rotorcraft community, both aspects of it, want and need. So this presents a much better forum for us.
When it comes to rotorcraft, do you think there's a lack of respect, or is it just a respected but very niche interest?
I think it's a small community. We've estimated the total number of private pilot helicopter people in the United States is 5,000 licenses. Now, a lot of those people are not in the game anymore, and some of them that do have the privates have also gone ahead and got their CFI or crop dusting or whatever else. So the whole community, even worldwide, isn't that large.
Well, Stu, I totally understand your lifestyle. I think when I retire, I could find a great deal of appeal in traveling with a camper, with a trailer, with a rotorcraft, and just driving the country. Kathy, I'm not sure that my wife, Cindy, would relate to your enjoyment of this lifestyle, but you seem to be smiling all the time. What's the deal?
I have a number of other things that I like to do, and I can carry parts of it with me. Stu and I really enjoy being together. We have a magazine which we both really enjoy. There are parts of it that are we don't. But in general, there's an enormous amount of satisfaction from the creation. Maybe it's that it satisfies some other people's needs. And Stu's research in it provides him with an intellectual avenue that we can't match anywhere else. There are all kinds of reasons why this is really good.
Some guy came up to me at one of the shows and said, you know, you're number one now. Kit Planes used to be number one with me, but your magazine is number one. Now, you can't believe how much energy you get out of a comment like that. It'll keep you trying no matter what.
Yeah. We get little love notes in our renewals and things. And that, you couldn't pay us enough to do it any other way, really.
Well, I hope you continue to find it good, because we love to see you here every year and get a chance to talk to you. And again, we'll advise our listeners to go to experimentalhelo.com. And thanks for sitting down with us.
Sure.
Stu and Kathy Fields have been my guests, and you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend, and have a clear and unlimited day.